Okay, welcome into episode 8 of the Beast Lore Podcast, a podcast about cryptid creatures, monsters, and the things that may or may not be hiding in the shadows. I'm your host, Jack Daly. Today we are going to be traveling to the Caribbean and to the island of Puerto Rico, where in the 1990s, a stealthy vampiric creature was reported to kill livestock and suck their blood. This creature came to be known as the Chupacabra. By the end of this episode, you'll come to see the tie between the Chupacabra and the United States' dark legacy of imperialism, and that the origin of the Chupacabra came from somewhere you might not expect. So every time I record one of these episodes, I'm sort of beholden to the texts or the sources that I can find on the topic, and so every once in a while I want to make mention of what they are, and pretty much everything that I found today was in a book called Tracking the Chupacabra, The Vampire Beast in Fact, Fiction, and Folklore by Benjamin Radford. And I found that this book was basically everything that you needed to know about the Chupacabra. I mean, there's documentaries, there's other books, but Radford is very thorough in his study of the creature and of, you know, the history of it, and he makes some good determinations from it. So I just thought that I should mention that. Pretty much everything I found is from that book, and I found it at my university's library, but I'm sure that you could get it off of Amazon, and perhaps it'll be at your local library, but it should be at a university library as well. So I'm going to start off with just some descriptions of the Chupacabra so that we can get sort of an idea of what we're talking about. Now, one thing that you need to understand is that the descriptions have varied pretty wildly about what people have seen when they thought that they've seen a Chupacabra. So, the Chupacabra, like Bigfoot, is basically known for what it leaves behind, and that is goats that have been sucked of their blood. In fact, the name Chupacabra actually means goat sucker, but is also known to suck the blood of cats and sheep, rabbits, dogs, chickens, ducks, hogs, and many other animals. So basically the key aspect of the Chupacabra is that it's accompanied by basically animal mutilations that have seemed to have been sucked of their blood. And that's where the vampiric nature of this creature kind of comes in. But basically, it's usually depicted as being 4 to 5 feet tall. It's said that it can leap fantastic distances. It has long claws. It has black or glowing red eyes. Sometimes it's said that it has spikes going down its back. Some have reported it seeing short bat-like wings. It's often accompanied by a stench of sulfur, and it's said that it will hiss when it is threatened. Another description says that it has short gray fur, that it has the chameleon-like ability to change color, that it has small or no ears, a lipless mouth, webbed fingers, and no tail. Yet another description describes it as an alien kangaroo with a powerful tail. It says it has big ears, maybe that it has needle-like teeth that are used for sucking the goats. And another says that it's a strange reptilian beast that kind of looks like a dinosaur. And then in the American Southwest, basically, people think that the Chupacabra almost looks like a canine. That it's on 4 feet, and that it has kind of elephant-like skin, but also is pretty small. But as we'll see, a lot of those sightings in the American Southwest were shown to be actually mangy coyotes. So if you think of what a coyote looks like with mange, that's what the American Southwest Chupacabra has been reported to look like, and that's because that's what it is. There's been individuals who have shot what they thought to be a Chupacabra and sent the body off to a laboratory, and it's come back as being a mangy coyote every time. So, to give you an idea about the history of the chupacabra, in 1995, a panic began in the small towns of Orocovis and Morovis in Puerto Rico. And basically, farmers were discovering that their farm animals had been drained of blood. And that's one key aspect, like I said, of the chupacabra, is this supposed drainage of blood. But I'm going to go into more detail about this later, but it's actually very difficult to determine how much blood has been drawn from an animal. A lot of people will think, like, oh, a farmer will be able to tell if an animal has been drained of blood, but that actually takes quite a bit of expertise to be able to, you know, look into all of the veins of a creature to see if it's blood drawn. So, mainly I think it's that, you know, it maybe has these two puncture holes, and maybe there's not clear blood drainage on the ground, and then they just will assume that basically it has been drained of blood and that the chupacabra is to blame. And basically the name chupacabra was, it's said that this comedian from Puerto Rico named Silverio Perez was the one that basically came up with this moniker, chupacabra. And the act of labeling the creature gave it reality. Now, what's kind of interesting about this whole thing is that nearly 5 months had gone by between these initial, animal mutilations and the first sighting of an actual creature that was reported to be the chupacabra. So, interestingly enough, the thing it was leaving behind what preceded the sightings of it, you know. So the name chupacabra existed before they actually had a form to put to the creature. And you know, I think it's interesting. I mean, in the United States we have a lot of these cattle mutilations and animal mutilations have occurred, and basically, you know, farmers will find their animals have been killed and they have these puncture wounds. There's not a lot of spilled blood, and I don't really have an explanation for it. The cattle mutilations, I mean, people will say that they're aliens. I don't necessarily think that that's what it is. Possibly, you know, maybe there's some kind of government thing going on. I'm not quite sure, but that's kind of where the chupacabra fits in on the spectrum, is as an animal mutilator. But basically, you know, like I said, 5 months passed until later on in a town called Canovanas, which is 20 miles east of the capital, San Juan, eventually there is a sighting, and I'm going to go quite into detail about that. But basically, you know, when that happened, the tabloids ran with it, and many people began to grow paranoid of the creature. Sightings started to kind of flood in. One person said that the creature could understand Spanish and that it was hurt by an obscenity that this individual said to it. Some Puerto Ricans believe that only silver bullets would stop the chupacabra. There is a theory that the creature was the source of the AIDS epidemic. Some people thought that the chupacabra was one of a group of about 20 or more aliens that had come to experiment with human blood to produce viruses that would eliminate humanity so that they could colonize the earth. And oftentimes mass hysteria is spread by the mass media, and that's definitely what was happening here. The tabloids just got all over this topic, and you can see these kind of very outlandish theories of, and basically paranoia started to run rampant. So this first most famous sighting happened, it was seen by a woman named Madeline Tolentino, and she gave a very detailed sighting, and this is which most depictions of the chupacabra are based. She said that it had dark eyes that went up to the temples and that spread around the sides of its head. She said that it was 4 feet high and that it walked like a human on its hind legs bipedally, as opposed to those, four-legged creatures that turned out to be the mangy coyotes. She said that it had thin arms and legs, that it had three fingers and three toes. She said that it didn't have any ears or nose, but instead it had small holes. And then she said that it had these feathery spikes, or possibly either feathers or spikes, running down the back. But really, she simply just saw too many details. She saw it through a window. There was contradictions in her story. At one point, she said that it runs. At another, she said it hopped. And then at another, she said that it floated. And she didn't run or panic, which you would expect somebody to do if they're seeing a monster. Instead, she joked about it with her mother. Now, what's interesting that right at the same time that these sightings occur, right before it, this movie came out called Species. And basically, it centers around this individual named Syl. Now, Syl is basically a human that had been injected with the DNA of an alien. And so it's a human that gets injected with alien DNA, and then it turns into this creature called Syl. And basically, the plot of the movie is that the U.S. government sent a signal into the galaxy, and it was answered 20 years later, and these aliens came down. The Syl creature and the Chupacabra look remarkably similar. They are both reported as having large or red, black wraparound eyes. Syl has an elongated head, a tiny nose, long fingers, a series of spikes along the spine, long, thin arms, thin legs, missing ears, and an almost non-existent mouth. And, I mean, that's basically exactly what the description of the Chupacabra is. And this movie was set in Puerto Rico. It was right before the hysteria. And Madeline Tolentino has been on record saying that she saw the movie and that she was very surprised by how similar the two of them are. And basically, the author of this book, Benjamin Radford, he postulates that Madeline Tolentino based her sighting off of this movie. And he cites this kind of psychological phenomena that will occur called confabulation, which is basically when you have a false memory, and you think that you're having something that's a real memory, but you're actually basing off of something else that you saw, like a movie. And so that's what he thinks, and I think that some of us can relate to that. I have certain memories from when I was a child, when I'm like, did that actually happen, or am I making that up? That just seems so weird that I think that I'm making it up, but I can't quite remember. I think that that's kind of tied into confabulation. And to me, that's what seems like what was going on. So, personally, I don't think that the Chupacabra really exists, to be honest with you. I think it all was based off of this sighting. And she basically made it all up. And the Chupacabra as it's depicted, like the Syl type creature, definitely I don't think exists. Obviously something was killing these animals, but yeah, I'll go into some details about the other theories about what that was, but I don't think it was a blood-sucking vampire Chupacabra. So, the sightings did kind of spread around. Obviously Puerto Rico is an island, and it was cut off from a lot of these places, but in Mexico, there were dead animals that were found with small tooth marks. In Chile, 300 animals were found dead. And in Brazil, 9 pigs were found dead. And Brazil has legends of a creature called O Bicho, which means the beast. And it's basically very similar to the Chupacabra. It's kind of a vampire-type creature. And also in the United States, like I said, it was in Cuero, Texas, where they found this mangy coyote. And Monster Quest, the show Monster Quest, has an episode about the Chupacabra, and they go into kind of detail about that Cuero creature. But a lot of the Southwest sightings actually turned out to be a mangy coyote. And what's kind of weird about a lot of these chupacabra sightings is that, well, you know, I guess they're not even sightings, but the thing is that oftentimes the chupacabra wasn't seen. These farmers, these ranchers, they would just find, you know, their mutilated animals, and they would just assume that chupacabra was the culprit. They would be like, oh, well, you know, I've got these dead animals, so it's probably a chupacabra. I didn't see anything, but I'm just going to kind of, you know, that's what everybody else is saying, so that's what I think it is. You know, like I said, it's very, very difficult to determine how much blood has been drained. Radford goes into quite a bit of detail about how that is determined, and I found it quite interesting that it's very difficult, and just taking one look, you're not going to be able to tell if blood has been drained or not. One aspect of why I think the vampiric nature of this creature is so often brought up is because that there's these two holes that are almost like a vampire's bite. You know, oftentimes in the vampire movies, the vampire will bite the victim on the neck, and it's with those two large teeth. But that's actually very consistent with coyote bites. So I definitely think that coyotes have something to do with this whole, you know, scenario. And it turns out that digesting blood is also very difficult as well. You need specific type of teeth to suck blood, like the vampire bat. But, you know, it's very rare for a creature to be able to, one, suck blood, and to, two, actually be able to digest it. So that would be sort of an animal anomaly in itself, let alone being some kind of supernatural creature. But really, I think the most interesting aspect of this whole story and of Radford's book is sort of the deeper history of Latin American vampires that he goes into. So he says that Puerto Rico is a land where monsters are commonplace. And he talks about these things called vejigantes, which are papier-mâché masks that are worn during carnivals. And you might want to look up a picture to see what these look like. But basically, they have menacing horns, they have fangs, and a leering expression. They're kind of like half demon, half animal. And there's been a long acceptance of vampire activity in Latin America. But over the last 400 years, the Christian and pagan elements of European, African, and New World culture have blended in Puerto Rico. And basically, in the Andean world, blood and fat are among the essential offerings to sacred powers. You know, you can think of, you know, like the Aztecs, they obviously had blood rituals, and blood has been very, very important to, you know, their culture and their social order. But Latin America, like many post-colonial societies, has endured a very real vampirism during European colonization. And this is where I think it really gets interesting. Of course, you know, you have the rape and the conquest of the Inca, the Aztecs, I mean, you know, really all of Mesoamerican culture and civilization was taken over by the colonizers, right? And I mean, you know, you had mountains of gold taken from the Aztecs by Cortez. You had rubber taken from the Brazilian rainforest by Henry Wickham, the British man Henry Wickham. You had quinine taken from the Quechua Indians. And so native resources being taken by outsiders is very much of a part of the cultural fabric of Latin America. And they have this white ogre theme, which is basically like the malevolent white man that's endowed with supernatural attributes. And oftentimes this white ogre is in need of blood or organs from Latin Americans. And there's a theory that the U.S. government created the chupacabra in a clandestine experiment that's gone wrong. And for many, the chupacabra actually represents the United States. In this case, you know, the United States is Dr. Frankenstein, and the Chupacabra is the monster. You know, residents of this U.S. territory have had their social and cultural riches taken and exploited. And in this regard, the vampire or the Chupacabra is metaphorical in this respect. You know, it's basically the blood is what's being taken. Like, think of the analogy. The Chupacabra is the United States, and then the blood is the social and cultural riches of Puerto Rico. And in that respect, it starts to make sense. You know, and Puerto Rico is in a lot of ways like the neglected child of in regards to its status within the United States. You know, it's not a state, but it's, you know, basically we can just, or not we, but I mean the United States can just kind of do what it wants. Puerto Rico was used as a testing ground for Agent Orange before the Vietnam War. And one interesting thing that happened was that there is negotiations between the governor Luis Munoz Marin and Robert McNamara. And basically McNamara wanted all of the people and all of the bodies even in the graves removed from the islands of Vieques and Culebra upon the purchase of them. And the Puerto Ricans called it the Dracula Plan. So the like imperial nature of the United States has been referred to as something vampiric by Puerto Rican politicians themselves. And so a man named Robert Jordan says that the Chupacabra as a symbol is a form of cultural resistance which many people of Puerto Rico, Mexico, and the greater part of Latin America use to maintain social bonds and gain control over growing fears surrounding the perceived destructive effects of toxic U.S. political and economic imperialism. But like I said, these explanations don't account for the actual dead livestock that have occurred in the eyewitness sightings. You can't tell a farmer that an archetype put holes through an animal's throat. So something is killing these creatures. But I don't think that it's a supernatural chupacabra. And obviously, you know, it's not an archetype, right? It's not like some kind of form. But definitely I think that the imperial legacy of the U.S. plays into this whole scenario. And I mean, being familiar with post-colonial theory and, you know, the extremely dark side of imperialism is very important. You know, in our high schools and in our middle schools and even our elementary schools, that we're not taught in the United States to think about this, the colonial legacy, as something that's very, very evil, right? Like, I can remember when I was in elementary school, we had to actually do a research project about one of the I can't even remember what they refer to them as, but I mean they're colonists, like, you know, they're the conquistadors. And I did mine about Cortez, and I thought he was really interesting, but I wasn't even thinking about it like, oh wow, he literally just came in and decimated a very, very proud civilization. You know, I was like, oh, he was just, you know, finding new land or whatever. Like, that we're not taught to think of that way, and it's very destructive. And you see that taking form in you know, xenophobia and just outright racism and jingoism and national pride that is still very pervasive today, especially in our political landscape at this point in time. But you know, once you get to higher education, you have to be cognizant of you know, this dark legacy, especially if you're in the humanities. You know, I mean, I can remember my first history paper that I wrote in college was basically the assignment was to talk about how or if Manifest Destiny served as a beacon of hope for, you know, people in the United States. And I basically was like, oh yeah, of course it served for a beacon of hope. And I got a D on that paper. And my teacher was a Hispanic man. And he basically was like, you didn't think at all about how Manifest Destiny, you know, affected the indigenous population of, you know, obviously the Native Americans, but also the landscape, like buffalo and, you know, the flora and fauna. So, you know, the conquest of the New World has a very, very dark legacy behind it. And if you haven't started thinking about it in those terms, definitely I would suggest that you do. So definitely wanted to get that in. But I think that that's honestly the most interesting part of the Chupacabra story. So there's also in Latin America, there's these things called the Lickachiri, which are another type of vampiric creature. And they are said to haunt the Altiplano of the Andes Mountains. And the name Lickachiri means fat stealer. So it attacks victims when they are asleep, and it basically cuts a thin slice into their side and removes their fat. And it said that you need to be administered a potion called Achachachi, and if you don't, the victim will die. And in the 16th century, there is a rumor that the Spanish conquistadors had come not for gold, but for the fat, and that they are shipping the fat home to cure diseases. And you can avoid the Lickachiri by traveling only at day and eating garlic, which is said to dilute the fat. So that's very interesting. The garlic aspect of things is, again, linked with these vampiric-like creatures. And people say that the Lickachiri will actually sell fat to international corporations for things like plastic surgery and anesthetics. And the bloodsuckers and, you know, like the Chupacabra and the Lickachiri, not only do they take blood, but they also take, by extension, the money and the livelihood of ranchers and farmers. So there's multiple different levels of, you know, the exploitation that is being taken. And again, we can see, like, you know, the United States, when they come in and take resources, not only are they taking the actual resources, but they're taking the livelihood of the native population itself by extension, right? And I thought it would be worth mentioning, in 1983, a foreign man was suspected as being a vampire, and he was actually burned alive. So there's you know, there's paranoia with, you know, foreign people coming in and taking their resources, and rightfully so. But the Chupacabra was actually not the first instance of a vampiric creature coming into town, or coming into Puerto Rico, because in 1975, in a town called Moca in Puerto Rico, there was a lot of, you know, livestock and domestic animals that are being killed. And again, there is no trace of blood. And so, like I said, you know, the Chupacabra was not the first example of mysterious predation in Puerto Rico. But I don't think that the Moca monster and the Chupacabra are necessarily linked, because it's kind of hard to believe that it would take a 20-year fast between the sightings, unless we've got some kind of Pennywise type situation going on, in which the creature is going to sleep for 20 years. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, Pennywise is the clown from Stephen King's It, and Pennywise will arise every 27 years to basically go on a killing rampage. So unless that's what's going on, that the Moca monster and the Chupacabra are probably not linked. And then in Nebraska in 1974, there was a similar thing. There was dead cattle, it was cattle mutilations, and there was reports of a monster thing that was sighted. That's the quote that I found for it. And I'd like to do an episode about the cattle mutilations. It's very fascinating. I haven't given it too much thought recently. There's been times where I've been very, very interested in it, but I'm not too fresh on the theories for why cattle mutilations have occurred, but maybe in the future I'll go into detail about it. Okay, so now I'm going to go into some theories of the origin of the chupacabra, like why it may exist besides this post-colonial legacy or the coyote. I'll go into some different details. So during this time, during the mid-1990s, Puerto Rico was being plagued by what's called dengue hemorrhagic fever. And I don't think that I'm saying that right, but basically they're being plagued by this fever, and 25,000 people died. And it was the largest epidemic in Puerto Rican history. At the same time, there is a looming hurricane named Hurricane Marilyn, and they were also being hit by the AIDS epidemic. And there's a theory that perhaps Chupacabra first emerged as a figure of Satan, and its appearance was sort of a moralistic explanation, because some of the most fervent believers in the Chupacabra's existence were Pentecostal leaders. And they're basically saying, okay, you know, you're like, we're being hit by satanic forces because of whatever reason, you know, this is punishment for our sins, essentially, which oftentimes that's explanation for monster sightings. Another thing that I think is probably pretty likely is that it's just a non-existent composite. And so many of these reports were conflicting because they simply were seeing different things. You know, I think that once you have this idea of the chupacabra in your mind, you'll be quick to see it if you see something flash before your eyes that you're not exactly sure what it is. And so you'll be like, oh, it was a chupacabra. It had these features. And then somebody else will say, well, I saw something else. I saw different features. And it's just because they're seeing different things. Like I said, you know, there's theories that there's the U.S. government genetics experiment gone wrong is why the chupacabra arose. Some people think it was an extraterrestrial, but a lot of those are kind of conspiratorial in nature. And the thing about conspiracies oftentimes is that they're impossible to disprove. And I think that that's one instance of it. Another is that the chupacabra basically could have been the result of this like starving mongooses situation that was going on. So what happened is that in the 1990s, Puerto Rico had an explosion in the rat population. And because of that, mongooses, their population went up too, because there's more rats for them to feed on. The mongooses were the predators. But then they killed off too many of the rats, so there is a surplus of mongooses, and they didn't have anything to eat, so they ended up turning to the domestic livestock to feed on them. And so I think that that's actually a pretty plausible explanation for the phenomenon. Well, that's all for today's show. A little bit of a shorter episode, but I think I actually covered the topic pretty well. By now, I think you'll agree that the Chupacabra, as it has been come to known in folklore, probably does not exist. The dark legacy of colonialism and imperialism is very much alive, but, you know, make sure to keep safe from mangy coyotes and rabid mongooses, and don't let your imagination run too wild when you're watching sci-fi movies. Beast Lore is available on iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, and wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to follow me on social media at USU Folklore, and that's on Twitter, and at Archaic Futurism on Instagram. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.